From the Land DeGrant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 21st day of September 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kirk Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Mark Russo will be here to discuss the agricultural weather forecast. He's with Risk Pulse in Chicago. And we'll be joined by agricultural economist Ben Brown from The Ohio State University to talk about the fundamentals of the soil bean market. You should stay with us. It's a really great conversation, and you can hear it this afternoon on the Closing Market Report. Right now, in fact, from Illinois Public Media, is Public Radio for the Farming World.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
December corn today down 8¾ cents at $3.69¾ on its settlement price. The March down 8¼ at $3.79¼ in May, $3.84¾, 8 lower. December of next year down a nickel at $3.88¼. November soybeans 21 lower, $10.22½ the settlement price. January down 19¾ at $10.27½. The March futures 17 lower at $10.21, and May beans at $10.17 down 13½. Next year's November at $9.64, 12¼ lower. The bean oil down 96 cents. The bean meal, $4 lower on the day. Wheat, soft red, July down 15¾ at $5.67. The lead option December there, by the way, down 20¼ at $5.64¾. And the hard red July, down 15¼ at $5.11½ a bushel. Live cattle futures in the October, 65 cents lower at $106.70. Feeders up 20 cents at $141.75. And lean hogs for the day down 90 cents at $65.60 on the afternoon. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is off about 865 points. U.S. dollar is up 0.7 for the day, and gold futures at $1,884.20, down $67.90 for the day. We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, to discuss this. I'm going to call it a profit-taking day in Chicago, though I think I was not so worried about the beans, but the wheat market beginning to roll over. Can you give me your assessment, please?
Yeah, we've ended the winning streak here of higher Monday, so hopefully this is not the new trend or new norm for a while. But yes, all the markets were on the defensive. The wheat particularly started out firm last night and up quite a bit lower, mainly giving up in Friday's gains there and actually closing below Friday's low. So technically, probably view last night's highs as fairly good resistance. Not a whole lot of new news on wheat-wise. There's some rain in some drier areas. Wheat business is just a little bit slow for the most part. We'll monitor wheat planting progress here this fall and see how that goes in the Western Belt. Overall, the main news was just outside market news. COVID-19, particularly in Europe, some possible lockdown situations taking place, maybe in the UK. Secondly, the overall global outlook. There's a couple global banks in general, and I don't have the names of them, but there's concern they might be under a little bit of financial stress or concern here short term. Then two over the weekend, Ruth passed away, and we've got an open seat on the Supreme Court, and public investor confidence dropped like a rock on ideas. Okay, now we're going to spend a lot of time with that issue when the second stimulus package or bill is still kind of up in the air. So we kind of lost investor and consumer confidence. And with the corn, well, the grain markets particularly, we just saw the trade run for a little profit-taking. Backing and filling, the funds have built a substantial long position, particularly in beans and actually in corn too. So harvest progress, trade's looking for about 11% of the nation being complete with a corn harvest versus 5% last week. A lot of that, of course, is in the South. A lot of activity in the upper Midwest here. Guys are starting to get a little bit more aggressive. Yield-wise, kind of all over the place. Still in this, well, it's above average, but it's no record breaker. Still relatively wet. You know, a lot of 29-30% moisture readings for the most part. Corn conditions. This afternoon's crop conditions report is expected to come in about 59% good to excellent versus last week's 60% good to excellent. This time of year, of course, we see crop mature and the green luster's gone. So maybe watch Iowa, see if they address that area, because they are a major player. On the bean side, this afternoon looking at 5% of the bean crop being taken out as a nation. Then on the bean conditions, maybe 1% drop in the conditions to 62% good to excellent, kind of see what states come in there. Bean yields, man, there's some 70 bushel beans in some areas and some 45, 50 bushels reports driving around the countryside here over the weekend. Looks like bean activity is going to pick up quite a bit here as we go through the week. Forecast is mainly dry until we move into this coming weekend here, and the return of the heat or a little warmer temperature could juice up the atmosphere, and we start seeing maybe 20-30% chance of some moisture as we move into next week. But overall, the forecast longer term remains, you know, on the dry side. So we're going to have a chance for guys to get out there and kind of see where we are on production expectations, Todd.
Okay, a couple of quick questions, and I'll divide this up because I think there are different ways to go about this. First, for those who really are lagging behind on their soybean sales, should they just pull the trigger on some cash sales, do you suppose?
We've been recommended that. Heavy. Get, priced. You can buy it back with a call option. So if we go higher down the road, you're on board, because once you get past January, the demand just drops off the cliff like a rock. If you want to hang on, see what happens, we've been doing a lot of put options. Put a price floor under you. That way, if all heck breaks loose in the pricing structure here, you've got some downside protection. You've taken advantage of this $1.60 rally. Don't want this $1.60 rally to get away from you. So, yes, I'd be getting aggressive on the bean sales. Make room for corn storage.
Yeah, so the follow-up question, I think you answered part of this probably, was if you're pretty far along on your bean sales and you really are looking out at the crop going, I don't know how much more I can go because I don't know what's there. Do you have a separate strategy to deal with that because of the higher price of soybeans, or do we just wait this out?
No, I think you call up one of your favorite analysts or broker and do the price floor strategy.
Right.
Man, you got the best of two worlds. You got the price floor. If it goes up, you still sell the cash higher, and hopefully you'll have, well, in your case, some extra beans to sell, Todd.
Well, I hope so. We'll find out. I might need them, and I just might need them. I think I'm probably with quite a few folks who've got some sales made on that. I only have one crop a year, and it happens to be soybeans this year. So on the outside markets, do we need to be worried at all about the drop on the Dow today?
Well, the Dow's been on a roll. It's due to correct. We'll go through a correction. It's just the thing we talked about a little bit on Commodity Week, man, as we get closer to this election and a lot of uncertainty in through here, the market is not like that. So it could be rough sailing here as we go forward. As the overall economy, there's some parts of the economy doing quite well, and there's other parts such as bars and restaurants. Man, that's taking a big hit in these retail stores in some cases. So depends which sector you're in. If you're a long-term investor, you probably got to ride the storm out. And if you're looking to enter the stock market arena, you want to probably be looking at breaks in through here between now and year end to look for some opportunities.
Hey, thank you so much. I appreciate you taking the time with me today.
Very good. Take care.
You too. Kurt Kimmel is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. You can find us online, listen to us on demand anytime you'd like, willag.org, or look us up in your favorite podcast application. Just search for the Closing Market Report. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. We're joined by Ben Brown, ag economist at The Ohio State University. Thank you, Ben, for being with us. I'd like to talk to you a little bit about the soybean market, maybe some other things as well. Can you give me your general overview of a market that has rallied sharply over the last month, please?
Yeah, thanks, Todd, and thanks for having me on. I really appreciate this opportunity. And you know, you're starting off with the question that everybody's been asking us, and I'm sure asking their economists across the country, you know, what's happening in the soybean market? Did we expect this? And the ultimate question is, where's the top in this market, right? And that's always the hardest question to describe. And once again, you know, we're seeing a late harvest rally or a late summer rally that, you know, we just don't get these very often. And so we tend to forget sometimes that when we see those rallies, it gets people in the minds of thinking, oh, I shouldn't have sold anything early on. I should have held my previous year crop a little bit longer. It starts creating a little bit of regret from folks. And I just like to remind people that we don't get these overly that often. And even when we do, sometimes you, at least on an average over several years, it still pencils out better to have a marketing plan ahead of time. So, but we've rallied all the way since the August WASDE report back there at the, you know, the 12th of August, you know, when we were, you know, looking at soybean prices, we were sitting at a November soybean price at 870, and we've rallied almost $1.70, a little over $1.70 since then. We've added, you know, about 200,000 net long contracts to the soybean futures, and we're approaching record long contracts. So at some point, I do expect traders to start selling those back, or, you know, selling those off and taking the profit sharing, which will, you know, put a little bit of a ceiling in this market and even start coming down as more and more people sell into that market. But couple of reasons. The biggest one is we have seen a deterioration in this crop. You know, several weather events, the derecho that went through Iowa, Illinois, and Indiana. It wasn't necessarily the wind, but more the hail that did a number on the soybean crop. But then really that dryness that we saw and experienced across most of the Corn Belt Midwest here in August and even the start of September. And you know, we saw that national soybean crop rating drop 11% over that period. And even though we're still looking at a good crop, and I like to remind people that, you know, we're still looking at a very good soybean crop. It's just not a great crop. And it's not the great crop we were expecting all the way back in May when we were looking at conditions and thinking about what this crop could potentially look like. You know, so we've come down from that. So that is providing, you know, fodder to this bull market a little bit, is those crop ratings. And even when we've started getting into the field, some of these soybean ratings have come in a little bit softer than expectations. And certainly that's been helping provide some support to the market. The other thing before I get to the demand side of the equation is I want to talk about inflation real quick. We are, in my opinion, starting to see some inflation creep in into these commodity markets. You look at what the Federal Reserve has done and even monetary policy from the federal side. You know, we have increased the supply of M1 money. So this is liquid cash into the market by 36% since March. And again, this is support to help fight the coronavirus. As a result of that, when you're putting more money onto the market, you have more dollars to go around. You start to suppress that dollar. And we've seen the dollar drop about 10.5% since March. And so our buying power becomes less. Everything we used to buy for a dollar, now it takes us $2 to buy that same amount, or, you know, $1.10 to buy that same amount. And as a result, right, we start to see these inflationary pressures into markets that have a story to tell. And that's why I phrase it that way, is because their soybeans have a market to tell. The market for soybeans, if you look back to the September WASDE report we just had, it wasn't an overly bullish report by any means, but it certainly wasn't bearish. And that's a key point here, is like, even though it wasn't bullish, it wasn't bearish, and that gave traders and people that are following these markets room to be optimistic about the demand side if the demand side was to start to develop. And it has, right? We've seen impressive sales almost daily. I mean, continued daily sales, not almost, but continued daily sales of soybeans. Really, over the last couple of weeks, they've been hovering somewhere, you know, anywhere between 120,000 metric tons a day to, you know, even upwards of 240,000 metric tons per day between China and unknown destinations. So they have been buying. Their sales into the year were very strong, 275% above the 5-year average for soybean commitments, both sales and exports, to start the year. And so, you look at this it's no wonder people are getting excited about the possibilities of the soybean crop down the road when you start looking at, okay, the supply is starting to weaken just, you know, a little bit. And again, we have a good crop, not a great crop, but a good crop, with both a, you know, pretty close to national record on yield, The nice thing is we cut acreage back in June on the soybean side from what we thought we were going to have. I was getting really nervous when I wasn't seeing people plant as much corn as what they had told me they were going to plant. And I thought, oh, that's going to go from corn acres into soybean. But really, we turned a lot of those acres into prevent plant. And so we had a plus there that we didn't have as many soybean acres as we've had, and we've seen that yield drop. So soybeans have a story to tell, at least both on the demand side and softening demand. And as a result, we're seeing money come into this commodity. And so we're seeing a little bit an inflationary issue to the point where we're probably overbought at the moment. Again, I think we'll see people sell those, take some profit sharing, and they'll put a cap on our market. When that happens, it's going to be a little bit longer, I think. I think we will see some more upward room in this market. They've pulled down today from last week's gains, but certainly I think there's a little bit more room to go, but certainly I think we're getting to the top end of that range. So
I do have a question about the demand side. In the September WASDE report, USDA did not change export demand for soybeans. It remained at 2.125 billion bushels, just like it was in the previous month. Why is the marketplace so excited? Do we have any real indication that there's more demand than what we've known about from USDA?
You're right. USDA did not change those soybean numbers, even though our current pace at the moment, at least in terms of exports, would suggest that USDA is low on export commitments. I think one of the things USDA is looking at is, at this point, commitment sales and everything are right in line with these projections moving forward. And I think USDA is also sitting out there, looking at a South American crop, that if the South American crop gets planted and harvested in a timely manner, Brazil is going to continue to be extremely competitive on the world market. The Brazilian real U.S. dollar relationship has declined 31% since the beginning of the year. Again, that's both on the macroeconomic side of these exchange rates. But you look at how the U.S. competes with Brazilian soybeans at the moment, and we're competing and we're very favorable at the moment. But when Brazil's crop comes online, early next year, next calendar year for us, look for Brazil to be very competitive in that market. I think one of the nice things a little bit is Brazil's a little bit late on planting. Nothing overly to get excited about at the moment, but they're getting a little bit later in planting, which potentially could extend that window for us, that export window for us, or just a little bit here in the United States. So that is positive. But the other thing in the big story, Todd, is even though we're seeing these large purchases from China, from the United States, we're replacing some of our other sales to other countries with these new purchases from China. So as a result, I still want to see some more sales from China. I'd like to see more sales from the rest of the world as well, that kind of took advantage of cheap U.S. soybeans back the last couple of years. I'd like to see them I'm sure they're really happy with the product and our quality of U.S. soybeans, but I'd like to see them come back into the market and continue to buy some of our soybeans. To really get excited about this export number and encourage USDA to increase it. And so I think personally, that's why I think USDA is not necessarily in a wait and see moment, but there's just really not the justification this early in the market year to make a big change like that. And certainly, it's one of those things that the market's excited about it. When you dive into it, we're gonna need to see more to justify some of these price increases.
Turn your attention to corn. The Trump administration making two announcements related to corn in the recent days. The president saying he would be making E15 available as long as the state legislatures agree to it and that station owners would want to put it into the pump, E10 pumps, that is, so that it would just be more widely available. This is something US EPA approved, I want to say in 2011, but is now being exposed as a way to distribute more ethanol into the gasoline market. And then, of course, the SREs, or the small refinery exemptions. US EPA, under Mr. Wheeler, looked back and said, we're not going to allow those to happen. So do either of those make much difference?
Yeah, so a great question. Both are, very high interest subjects for farmers across the country at the moment. I'm going to start with E15, allowing E15 products to flow into E10. And the reason I want to start here is because this is the subject I know less about at the moment. And so I'll finish up with something I'm more comfortable talking, you know, in terms of what I expect to see. To be truthful, you know, what we're waiting for on the E15 into the E10 infrastructure is, states to approve this. So now it's up to individual states to approve this. I don't know how many states are going to approve this. I'm sure there's some that are ready to go and very excited about this. Others, you know, it could take a little bit longer to do this. And especially when you look at some of our big driving states in the summer, like Texas, Florida, California, we'll have to see, what their urgency is to get some of these through. The next question comes down to economics. Who's actually going to be blending this into the fuel stream, right? Oil refiners, there's not an economic incentive for them to blend higher level blends into the fuel stream. They certainly don't want to. As we've talked about, their pie keeps shrinking as motor fuel demand has started to decline, leveled out the last 10, 15 years, and now starting to decline even. For a couple of reasons, but nonetheless, they're trying to claw back demand, try to build up support for their product as well. And so you look at E15 and this change of allowing E15 into the E10 infrastructure, and there's still a lot of unknowns about that. So to quantify and know how much of an impact this is going to have, we're still probably really questioning it, but there's no doubt that this is something that corn farmers have been advocating for and trying to get E15 to become more available and to push it at retail pumps. There's no doubt that this is something that they have been pushing for and are probably excited to see. Now, something I'm more comfortable with is the SREs, the small refiner exemptions, and how the administration's both treated these, and then how the rejection of these gap year waivers or the historical waivers that we got last week. When we look at this was a way that oil refiners have been able to drop the mandate, the renewable fuel standard mandate below the E10 blend level. And as a result, what it has done is it hasn't really changed our consumption of ethanol, which I think is a big misnomer out there that, these SREs are killing demand for ethanol. It really hasn't changed our demand for ethanol when you dive in and look at the numbers. But what it has done is it has ruined or significantly decreased the incentive for people to put in infrastructure for future ethanol demand. If you take the renewable identification numbers, which are associated with every gallon of ethanol produced, and you drop, the mandate below the E10 blend wall, and all of a sudden now you're crashing the value for these renewable identification numbers or RINs to the point where, they become so cheap and they're not being able to do what they were designed to do. And so, I look at this and I say, okay, yes, we have now, pushed the mandate back above the E10 blend wall. It creates a demand for those renewable identification numbers. It increases the price of those, and it allows the incentive for infrastructure improvement for future ethanol demand. And I think that's really good. Now, I'll go back to something I said just a few moments ago and the fact that we really haven't changed the ethanol consumption. We still consume about 10% ethanol, 10-11% ethanol for every gallon of gasoline consumed in the United States. So we really have, and that's been constant over the last 5 years, even in this period of increased small refinery exemption. But the one thing that we have done is we've decreased the integration of bio-based diesels and biomass diesels into the gas stream. And so by the waiver request denial last week, to where now we expect, SREs in the future to be really at a minimum. I mean, I think we just, what this ultimately has done is it has killed this SRE, the small refiner exemptions as we knew them, or the program as we knew them. And as a result, I think this is a big win for soybean producers that are producing bio-based diesel products and soybean oil, because now all of a sudden, they have a demand back for their product, and we've gotten those RINs for both bio-based diesel and ethanol back up to a level where we're providing incentives for people to invest and put in infrastructure for renewable fuels. And I think that's the story that needs to get out there, Todd, in terms of what's the overall impact of this.
Some of the work that Daryl Good and Scott Irwin did on this very subject several years ago pointed to exactly the kind of function you're discussing. Do you think that there is enough infrastructure in the United States to increase soybean diesel production?
Well, certainly it's the lowest of all the, you know, between it and ethanol infrastructure as well. You know, the trick here is the acceptance of biofuels and bio-based diesels into motor fuel consumption, right? It certainly, you know, when you look at where that product's going, it's going into very specific markets. And can we break bio-based diesels out of that market into other channels? Personally, I think we can. And I think there's an opportunity to it. But then the question becomes, does this start to dig into ethanol's market share? And certainly when you look at the cost competitiveness of the two, ethanol still continues to be, you know, the cheaper of the two. But there's no joke or there's no question in my mind that bio-based diesels, you know, can compete in some of these markets if we could increase the infrastructure around it. Now, to what extent that is, you know, that's a question that I haven't dug into the numbers. I'm sure we could calculate it, but it's, you know, I do think there's a limit. And then the question becomes, do bio-based diesels and ethanol start competing for the same market share if, you know, biofuels get into that fuel stream as well? So,
are you suggesting that the auto industry not only goes electric, but it goes B20?
It could, right? Like, I mean, we haven't seen that at the moment. Certainly there's countries around the globe in that product.
Well, I'm just thinking about which areas are they going to compete against each other because the combustion is different.
Correct. And that's ultimately what I was saying. Now, if you know how quickly that happens, I don't know. I'm just saying it is a potential option down the road.
Hey, Ben, thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, yeah, thank you. Appreciate it, Todd.
Ben Brown is with the Ohio State University. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. On this Monday, let's turn our attention to the weather forecast. Mark Russo is here. He's with Risk Pulse in Chicago. It has been fantastic, and I'm hopeful it'll stay that way. Mark, thanks for being with us today, and can you tell me a little bit about the weather?
Sure, Todd. Again, thanks for having me, and certainly looking ahead here, that we think the fantastic weather continues over the next couple of weeks. In terms of rain, very limited rain activity here across not only Illinois, but across much of the Corn Belt over the next couple of weeks. Really the only chance of some minor and kind of short duration rain activity will be coming up across the Eastern Corn Belt over the upcoming weekend and into the early part of next week, but we don't anticipate that to be very disruptive in terms of harvest progress. And as for temperatures, while readings will be variable coming up, no sign of any extreme cold coming back in, or even from the warm temperature side, there'll be some, you know, milder days within this very nice stretch that we're in right now. So all in all, you know, pretty quiet autumnal period. First day of fall is tomorrow, and overall a pretty quiet pattern and favorable for harvest progress coming up.
Other than those places where the growing season has already ended, is there any reason to think that we will have sooner rather than later frost freeze dates across the growing regions in the Midwest?
Well, we did have, you know, back there a couple of weeks ago with that one punch of cold air that came in, there was some freezing conditions in areas of the Dakotas and on into Minnesota. But really since then, again, it's turned quieter. And the fact that that looks to continue later in September or later in October, it's looking like, you know, right now a normal or even, you know, slightly delayed next round of freezing temperatures coming in. There's just nothing that we see right now that points to any, you know, unusual or long-term cold spells here in the Midwest. And at least, you know, as we go into the start of October.
I'm going to make some conjecture here. Is the La Nina in part responsible because dry weather conditions mean we don't get as much cool off in the soils?
La Nina, we think, is part of it. And yeah, especially from a drier weather standpoint, that tends to be more of the relationship with La Nina. And it's true also in the plains, harder winter wheat belt, which is also on the drier side coming up. We are seeing, actually, with the activity of the tropical activity around the globe, you know, this hyperactive mode that we've been in across the Atlantic basin, combined with a couple of weeks ago, a flurry of activity in the Western Pacific and the number of typhoons there, we think that's altered a bit of the Arctic pattern, which is creating a little more temperature variability, but not seeing, again, any real signs that, getting into any kind of exceptionally cold mode via the La Nina. Rather, it's a bit more of the opposite.
It's always great to be with you. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Todd.
Mark Russo is with Risk Pulse in Chicago, Illinois, and helped us to wrap up this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, thanking you for taking the time to be with us this afternoon. Be sure to visit our website, willag.org, willag.org. There you'll not only find our daily agricultural programming, but news and information from the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences, University of Illinois Extension, USDA, and other places as well. You can always look that up again at willag.org, willag.org.